One fact I don't like is that I don't know why she did this either. The one who determines the schedule for everyone for labs changed things around. We used to do this lab later and the saltwater one now, which I liked better because we have not really gotten too deeply into the stuff you're covering today yet in lecture. It's not that it's going to be undoable stuff, but it will make more sense to you later after you've been lectured about this. Anyway, we're doing molecular modeling today, right? So get out your molecular modeling packet. And that's just like each week, the packet is really a substitute for what you would have had to buy as a manual, so that the packet is what you're using for your instructions for that given week. All right, so this is where you're actually going to be doing the molecular modeling. By the way, as soon as I shut up for the day and turn off the recorder, you should probably all come up, because otherwise you'll forget, and get the week three packet. Each week you get a new packet. So the week three ones are up here, but wait till I'm done recording. So in addition to your packets, open up your little kits of molecular modeling materials, which are basically balls, sticks, and springs, and see what you have as an inventory. Now, right here. Mm-hmm. So, first of all, what do the spheres represent in this model? Each individual sphere represents an atom. And actually, more properly, when you really get down to it, each ball is an atomic nucleus. Not really the entire atom, even. Okay? And so what's in the nucleus? Protons and also maybe neutrons, but definitely protons at least. Or some number of protons, not necessarily plural. One or more protons, zero or more neutrons. Okay, but that's what the spheres represent. Now, why do you have different colors of spheres? Different elements, different types of atoms, which is the same thing as different elements. Right. Now, you could construct this kit at home and not have any paint. In other words, all of your spheres would be just wood color. But you'd still be able to tell what kind of atom is which is represented by each type. How would you do that? In other words, what besides the color is different about the different atoms represented by wooden spheres? No. What do you mean by the structure? No, they're all spheres of wood the same size. I'm talking about not the atoms, the models. How can you tell other than the color, or if you can't see the color? How? Did everyone hear that? No, of course not. I'm using you as an example.
Sorry.
When you talk to me in response, you should speak just as loudly as I am. I'm used to it. Yes, but they're not labeled. Well, in a sense, they are. They have a guide, but that's based on color. Just actually take them out and look at them. What is different about yellow balls compared to red balls, other than the color? What about the holes?
There's one has more holes than the other.
So not the holes, the number of holes. Right? That's why you could construct these and all have them all be the same color, but you'd still be able to tell one type of atom from another because of the number of holes. Now, what from today's lecture is represented by the number of holes? Right, the atom's valence. And by the way, what kind of atoms do we have?
Non-metals.
nonmetals, carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen, the four biggies that we talked about, right, that all organisms are made out of mostly. Those are known as all nonmetals. Hydrogen, remember, is a nonmetal, even though it's over there by itself on the left. So these are nonmetals. And you correctly said that the number of holes is the valence. I already defined valence in lecture. Remember, well, who wants to repeat what that is? What is the valence?
The outermost shell or valence electrons on the outermost shell?
No, that's the number of valence electrons. What is the valence?
How many you need to reach a hole?
Right. How many additional electrons are required to fill the valence subshell? Right, which is different in general from the number of electrons that are in that valence shell. Everyone clear on that? Now, back to all four colors or all four atom types being nonmetals. Since we're only dealing with nonmetals, what kind of bonds are we going to be making? Covalent bonds. And covalent bonds produce what kind of superstructures? Bigger than atoms?
Molecules.
Molecules, unlike salts, right? So we're building molecules today. But the valence is how many additional electrons needs to satisfy that one atom, right? Covalent bonds are shared electrons, shared pairs of electrons. And what we didn't actually get into yet in lecture, which is why I don't like doing this early, is that there are single covalent bonds, there are double covalent bonds, and there are triple covalent bonds that are possible. But each single covalent bond, remember, is two electrons, one from each of the two atoms, simultaneously being shared by both of them. So one bond consists of two electrons. Well, one of those shared electrons an atom already had before the bond is formed, right? If it forms the bond, it gets credit for an additional electron, right? If it has a valence of three, for instance, which of your atoms has a valence of three? Nitrogen, which, notice, is three steps away from the right edge on the periodic table. So a valence of three. Three holes. What I'm building up to is that another way you can think in terms of the molecular models, another way you can think of the valence is how many bonds, how many covalent bonds that type of atom needs to make in order to be satisfied. Okay? Because each single bond covalently allows that atom to take credit for an additional atom, one half of the pair that shared. Is that all clear? Since nitrogen is three steps away, that means it needs to always, in any molecule it's part of, form a total of three covalent bonds. Now that can be three individual covalent bonds, it can be a double covalent bond, then a single covalent bond. Or it can be one triple covalent bond. They all add up to three. Another important point of all this, though, is that if you're building a molecule out of these models, it is wrong if you have any empty hole. Molecules form in such a way as to satisfy all the constituent atoms, valence-wise. That means every hole needs to be filled. But it also means any molecule that hydrogen, for instance, is going to be part of, however many hydrogens there are in the molecule, every individual hydrogen is making exactly one covalent bond with something else, because hydrogen individually has a valence of one. Every oxygen is forming two total bonds, two singles or one double, because oxygen has a valence of two, and so on. That all clear? Okay, so if you show me your model and you have any empty holes, it's going to be wrong just for that reason. Now, I'm not scoring you. You're done with the scoring. That was the quiz. But you have to go through with the stuff today to understand it. So call me around as the packet probably tells you to let me look at your things. What are bonds represented by? Sticks and springs. Now, why have two different kinds of materials here? What does a stick represent? An individual stick represents what? Yeah. What is it? More specifically, you're right. But for instance, an ionic bond is a chemical bond, and they certainly don't represent ionic bonds.
So, one stick, one covalent bond, and the springs are two?
Not quite. It's tempting to say that. It is true that a single stick represents a single covalent bond, which means in terms of subatomic particles, a single stick represents two electrons. Right? One from each of the two involved atoms. They're sharing a pair. Each contributes one, though. A single spring also represents one bond, covalent bond. But you never use a single spring. We use a pair of springs to represent a double covalent bond. Why not use just two sticks? Because if you look at the holes on these, they're bored in at different angles, which is meaningful to the geometry of the atom. They're at angles, and you can't bend wood. So if you hook together two oxygen molecules, for instance, which each has a valence of two, you can't have curved, to make them go in at the right angles, you need to be able to bend the bond, which are the springs. But an individual spring is two electrons. You just don't use a single spring. You would use a rod instead. If it's a double bond, though, you use a pair of springs bent like this. That are at different angles.
Okay.
A spring will allow you to do that. But two springs represents one double bond, which is really two single covalent bonds combined. And therefore, four overall electrons. Does that all make sense? Now, you only have four element types in terms if you obey the colors. But if I haven't actually checked on this yet, if we are still doing the same way we were doing it with the manual, when we had manuals, you had to have one represent sulfur. Is that still in the packet? Well, even if it's not, let me just ask you: if you wanted to build a molecule with sulfur as one of its constituent atoms, but you only had these four colors to work with, you could use one of them to represent sulfur, but it shouldn't be a random choice. Which one would you use to represent sulfur? Why oxygen? They have the same valence, which is another way of saying they're in the same group. Members of the same group have the same valence. They're the same number of steps from the right edge, right? So they should have the same number of holes to represent their equal valences.
So then would lithium be the same as hydrogen?
Yes, lithium would be the same as hydrogen, except lithium is a metal, and it wouldn't form a covalent bond. We wouldn't use it in molecular modeling. We would use that if we were forming salts. But that's a good point about molecules, right? When you build a molecule, it is done. You can build another identical molecule, but they're not hooked together. On the other hand, if you have ionic bonds, it just keeps getting bigger and bigger because they're all clumped together. Molecules aren't clumped together. They're individually a complete unit. Okay, and that's only for nonmetals getting together but with covalent bonds. All right, now, and this is why I said earlier that this ball itself really represents the nucleus, right? And some of the electrons, I should say. Not the entire atom, though. Because every atom in a molecule is involved in at least one bond. Otherwise, it wouldn't be a member of the molecule. And so every individual molecule is sharing at least one of its electrons with someone else. And the electrons are represented by the bonds, not by the balls themselves. Everyone clear on that? Now, also, we're going to be talking about formula units. We're going to be talking about... Let me look at the packet to see how much I want to say today. You can tell I've studied this. Okay, so the functional groups are part of this. This comes at the end of a chapter that's still in the future. It'll be before the first test. But functional groups I will lecture on when we get to that point. That's what sucks about having this so early, is that usually I would have already lectured on functional groups by the time we get here. They will make more sense to you later, but it's good, in a sense, to get introduced to them practically with models and to start trying to recognize them, but I'll actually talk about them and systematically survey them in the lecture itself. Is that all good? I'm bringing this up, though, because since it's in the packet, functional groups are fair game for quiz questions. Just keep in mind the general rule that most of my quiz questions will be about what I'm actually talking about in the recording. So the stuff that I've said so far, and I'm pretty much done, that will make up the bulk of the questions for next week. Oh, except when we look at structural formulae. A chemical formula is for instance, H2O is a chemical formula. It's just using symbols and subscripts to tell you how many and which type of atoms are involved in the molecule or in the species. It doesn't have to be a molecule. But a structural formula is a way of depicting a molecule showing the relationships of each atom to the other atoms in that same molecule. That doesn't do that here, right? This is more condensed information. You have to just know that from your knowledge of valences how this thing is arranged. And so you should know that it's not like this. Why is this impossible? HHO. I'm sorry, this fan's loud as hell.
Because it doesn't say...
It is a compound as long as it has two different or more kind of atoms, elements, I should say. This is a structural formula, but it's wrong. It's impossible for water to form like this. Why? Right, hydrogen has one valence of one. It only has one hole. How are you going to stick two wooden pegs in a ball that has one hole in it? Right? That's the relationship between valence and number of holes in the models. Oxygen has a valence of two. It needs to form two total bonds. Hydrogen each has to make one bond, so it's going to be like that, right? So anyway, this is a structural formula. That's wrong. This is a chemical formula. A structural formula gives you more information, even though it doesn't really show correct angles or anything like that. But at least gives you more information than a structural formula, and this is a two-dimensional rendering of what you would actually build with the model. And you should make sense of a structural formula based on what your model looks like. Okay, so try to do that as you do these things today. Another example, for instance, would be methane, which is like this. Methane's the chemical formula, CH4. But this is the structural formula, and it's not a coplanar molecule. It's really a tetrahedron in three dimensions when you build it, for instance. So this is not actually reality, but at least shows you the relationship between one atom to the other kind of atom. Notice, though, just like in all molecules, each hydrogen is individually making one bond to satisfy its valence of one. Carbon is tetravalent. It has four holes. It has a valence of four steps away from the right edge. So each carbon in a molecule needs to be making four total bonds. In this case, it's four individual bonds. Now, the last thing I want to say before I turn off the recording is that there's such a thing as electron dot diagrams that we can use to represent atoms. And for any given individual element or atom, the electron dot diagram starts with the symbol, the atomic symbol from the periodic table for that given element. So for instance, for oxygen it's O, that represents the atomic nucleus. So that's the protons and the neutrons in there. But then you represent electrons with dots situated around the O, but not just randomly. Notice where oxygen is. Has a valence of 2. It has 8 electrons total because it has 8 protons, right? It's element number 8. But in an electron dot diagram, we don't represent and we don't bother writing any non-valence electrons. How many non-valence electrons does oxygen have? Two. The first two fill up that first shell. Those are non-valence. That's not an outer shell, right? So those dots don't go on here. All we represent are the valence electrons in an electron dot diagram. So that's the other 6 of them, right? But the second shell, which is the valence shell for oxygen, contains how many orbitals? No, it contains 2 suborbitals. S suborbital and a P suborbital. How many orbitals does it contain? 4. The 2s, that's 1 s orbital, and 3 different 2 p orbitals, remember? For a total of 4 orbitals. So think of the 4 corners around the O as the 4 orbitals. You have 6 that you have to get rid of, or you have to represent, right? Because 2 of them are in the lower level we don't write. You have 6, but you start filling orbitals half-filled at once. So you put a dot there, then you move on to another orbital. Dot here for another orbital, third orbital, fourth orbital. You still have 2 more electrons that you need to represent, right? So then, after you've half-filled all the available orbitals, you start filling them. And it doesn't matter which 2 you fill. It could be on this side, or it doesn't matter. Okay? Notice these 2 pairs here. Those are going to remain the permanent property of oxygen. Those are unshared electrons. Each of these ones, though, that's a half-filled orbital, an electron in 1 orbital by itself, those are represented by the empty holes. And the reason oxygen has a valence of 2 is because it needs to get credit for 2 more electrons, which it does by binding to 2 different other things getting credit for their shared electron. It could be 2 hydrogens, for instance, which would make you water. That all clear? And if it's 2 oxygens, then you're going to have a double bond between them. In other words, this single one and this single one are going to individually form bonds with the other one to form an overall double covalent bond. So remember that a double bond counts as 4 electrons, a single bond counts as 2, a triple bond counts as 6 electrons. You're not going to build any triple bonds, but they exist for certain atoms. Okay, now, yeah, go ahead.
Can you write H2O as OH2, or is that...
You mean as a chemical formula?
Yeah.
It's not right simply by our convention. It means the same thing. And you could actually write it that way in a structural formula as part of a bigger molecule. But no is the quick answer. There are times when it can be rearranged in the chemical formula, but in more complex molecules. Did someone else have a hand up? I thought. Okay. Everyone understand what I'm saying about only using valence electrons for the dot diagrams? So what would hydrogen's dot diagram look like?
You always start with the nucleus,
H.
It doesn't matter where you put the dot,
but it has just one of them. You get another hydrogen with that, another unsatisfied valence. But if they each share the one, then that pair of electrons turns into a one covalent bond. And by the way, a covalent bond in a structural formula can be written as a line, but sometimes the line is just implied, like in some of these functional groups that you have to learn. What I mean by that is that a hydroxyl group is an O and an H, so it could be written as just HO like that, or H slash O slash, or dash, I mean. In other words, an H by an O, since there is no element with symbol HO, we know these are two different ones, and that's just a shorthand way of writing that there is a bond between them without actually writing the bond. They mean exactly the same thing, though. Okay, any questions before I stop the recording?